All right, we're back for the long-awaited, much-anticipated college football preview. I'm joined, as always, by Pete LaCleed in Las Vegas, Nevada, baking in the hot sun. And Pete, I'm sorry if you hear a child screaming in the background. I think that's my daughter, Lucy. It's hard to hear through my headphones, but I'm pretty sure it was Lucy.
It makes me feel like home, so I'm sure you'll hear my kids screaming here too soon. So excellent. It'll be good.
I just heard it again. Definitely Lucy. So Lucy, welcome to the show. But Pete, we've got the college football preview going on today. We're going to try to squeeze a lot into 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And we're going to do that in a similar way that we are doing the NFL previews. We're working our way through those. I think next up on the agenda is the NFC, AFC West for the NFL preview. So to our listeners, you can look forward to that coming out soon. But tonight, all about college football and the gridiron. So we're going to do the same thing we've done with the NFL. We're going to talk about storylines to watch, big picture stuff, and then choose some key matchups. So let's see. Let's go with the Power Five conferences first, Pete. Let's start with your favorite conference, of course, the ACC. You, as we know, are a proud Hokie. Virginia Tech all the way. Big
Absolutely.
ACC booster. Huge homer here. Fan of Tyrod Taylor, who, by the way, Pete, did you see this news article about how everyone's been pronouncing Taylor's name incorrectly?
I did. I actually meant to text you. I finally caught up on Hard Knocks on HBO over the last day and a half or so, and I had no idea. So the story goes, it was actually Lee Corso who called him Tyrod
right.
the first time.
He's
on
the
game
one
day
who
back
set
in 2007.
He set us off in this wrong direction.
Lee Corso, who was always known for mispronouncing.
I know. Yeah. So I just read it. But as I understand, I think the correct pronunciation is Tyrod. Is that correct? Tyrod
yes,
Taylor?
That's how he said it. And then he said, yes, my given name is actually Tyrod. And what's funny is they said, what does your mother call you? And he said, my mom doesn't call me by my given name. So, he calls himself Tyrod. I know Baker Mayfield called him Tyrod. And I mean, Baker Mayfield's brilliant, right? So he can't be wrong,
right?
That's sarcasm. But
should inaugurate the third string drinking game, that every time one of us says it incorrectly and says Tyrod, we have to do a shot. So we're gonna try to keep this as correct as possible. Fortunately, we're not going to mention Tyrod Taylor's name too much in this episode, if at all, because he's obviously graduated from Virginia Tech and he's moved on to do great things in the NFL, fearlessly leading the Hugh Jackson Cleveland Browns this season, until Baker Mayfield supplants his roster spot, which is hopefully never. But anyway, Tyrod Taylor, here's to you, buddy. I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name all this time.
Literally since the day he came on campus, I've been mispronouncing his name. So 11 years running. So
yeah, and it's
go
not just,
me as a Hokie.
It's not just you, not just me. It's literally everybody. I just, like, the poor guy, just so resigned to his fate of being Tyrod that he never mentioned to anybody that he was actually Tyrod Taylor.
Well, and he's such a quiet guy that you can absolutely see him just kind of rolling with the punches. I am 99.9% sure I heard interviews with the Virginia Tech coaching staff, obviously NFL draft day, they're all calling him Tyrod. I mean, this has been propagated at this point for 11, 12 years. That's incredible.
So as a Hokie, Pete, what do you think the chances are that Tyrod is actually pulling a giant prank on everybody and trying to get everybody to start pronouncing his name the wrong way now?
That would be incredible.
Is there any chance, given what you know of Tyrod Taylor, any chance at all?
No, that doesn't really seem like him, but I've been surprised before. Everyone says he's a great dude and he's a funny dude, so maybe you're calling the ball on this one before anyone else is, but I'm not seeing it yet. I kind of hope you're right, just so I don't look like a huge idiot.
Well,
it wouldn't be the first time I've looked like a huge idiot, so I'm resigned to that fact.
That's me literally every day. I would admire I just admire the humility, though, of Tyrod to go through his entire professional life without having corrected anybody until this moment. So here's to you, Tyrod Taylor. That's why we are the sponsors of the unofficial Tyrod Taylor fan. When I'm saying Tyrod Taylor fan club, I mispronounce it. So sorry, Tyrod. But
I was just about to compliment you on how you said it five straight times, without messing it up.
I know, I was doing so well. So well. All right, shot. Okay. So anyway, Pete, we can move on now. Let's talk about the ACC.
Yeah.
ACC storyline to watch, and who's going to come out on top in this conference. What do you think?
So I think looking at the ACC this year, the first question in any sound mind who watches college football is, can anyone catch Dabo Swinney's Clemson Tigers. The Clemson Tigers have had a fantastic last 3 years, obviously perennial favorites in the college football playoff. They obviously lost to Alabama the last 2 out of 3 years in the national, in the college football playoff. Always competing, unbelievably stout defense. They've had some quarterback turnover, but they've still hung on strong. And the question really is, can anyone actually challenge them with a possibly resurgent Florida State under new coach Willie Taggart? Can Miami, who has been so close the last 2 or 3 years under Mark Richt, can they really get back and make that Florida State-Miami game actually relevant here when it happens? All the pundits are calling this one as a easy Clemson win in the conference, with Miami challenging them in the ACC championship game. But I think that the question has to be, can anyone catch the Clemson Tigers right now? Well, what are you thinking on Clemson as the easy favorite coming out of the conference so far right now, Zach?
Yeah, I think they have to be, because of the recent track record and what they've done. And Dabo Swinney, I think, is undisputably one of the top three coaches in all of college football right now. I think Nick Saban has a resume that goes up against some all-time names, and so you have to put Nick Saban at the top. But Dabo Swinney, I think, has to be two or three, especially given the recent scandal that's following Urban Meyer right now. I would definitely put Dabo ahead of Meyer there. So I think Clemson's always going to be in the conversation. And as far as the other teams that I see who could be in the conversation from the ACC, I don't see them really mounting a serious challenge against Clemson. I mean, you know, there was the anticipated matchup between Miami and Clemson last year that ended up just being really ultimately a blowout. And then Virginia Tech, I'm really excited to see what happens with them. And if I were picking a storyline of the ACC, that's actually what I would go with. What can Virginia Tech do? Can they take the big leap forward that will make them more in line with the Virginia Tech that we knew of the 2000s era, the early noughts? And so I think that's kind of the storyline to watch in the ACC. What's Virginia Tech going to do? I think they're sort of the wild card here, but I don't see them mounting a serious challenge against Clemson for all the reasons that we already mentioned.
I like that storyline. I think it could make it fun for me this year. I don't really see anyone truly threatening Clemson in this conference this year. Where I do think it gets interesting is there was a little quarterback drama out of Clemson this year. Obviously, Kelly Bryant has done incredible things as he stepped in for Deshaun Watson, who's now with the Texans, who you and I have talked about a couple times and how much we're fans of his. But Trevor Lawrence, who is a true freshman, supposedly made this a pretty good competition between Kelly Bryant. Kelly Bryant, who wasn't necessarily the favorite in the Clemson camp for a long time because they didn't think he necessarily had the confidence or the poise in the pocket to effectively lead a team under the kind of pressure that we see in Clemson. So if Clemson suffers one or two losses, I expect some conversation to be about that quarterback situation. I don't really think Kelly Bryant is in line to lose this spot based on what he's done in the past, what I think is a sound quarterback, if not your championship caliber quarterback every year. But the storyline I'll tell you I'm actually watching is Boston College, who has been kind of a laughingstock in the Atlantic Coast Conference here for the last couple of years. Some really, really down years up there in Chestnut Hill. But I'm a huge fan of their coach, Steve Adazio, at Boston College. And I think the big storylines in terms of program prowess this year are really, like we said, Miami. Can they finally get over the hump and make themselves relevant? The resurgence of what I think is going to be Boston College, where I think A.J. Dillon, who's their running back, is a dark horse Heisman favorite. The fight in Adazio is up there, I think, will be legitimate. And I also think this is the last season for Larry Fedora at UNC, where they've had discipline problems, obviously losing problems. And just, I would argue, after Jim Harbaugh, who we'll get into here in a few minutes, probably the most disappointing coach who came in with so much hoopla, who I think is going to be on the out here in the ACC at UNC here soon. So it's going to be interesting. So are you picking Clemson to win this right now, or are you looking at another dark horse?
No, if I were betting, I would definitely say Clemson. You know, I don't know if I share your fandom of Steve Adazio. I mean, I'm looking at his track record at BC, and it's really not that great. He's never had more than a 7-win season, but I will use that as a point of departure to say I think that the ACC has a pretty impressive coaching lineup. I mean, when you look at who they have from David Cutcliffe at Duke, obviously we already talked about Dabo. I think Steve Adazio is a perfectly fine coach. Willie Taggart now, of course, and Justin Fuente. And I already mentioned Virginia Tech, but I'm a huge Justin Fuente fan.
Same. boy, he's been so good for that program. And you know that I've got a closer look on that program than any others. He's been so good for that program. But let me ask you about Willie Taggart, as you brought him up. So Willie Taggart, a Florida guy, you and I talked about him a lot back in December, January, during our infamous coaching carousel that we talked about here on Third String a few times. Do you think Willie Taggart is poised for a big season at Florida State, or you think this is going to be kind of a mediocre season as he gets his feet under him?
No, I think it's a mediocre season. One of the reasons I say that is because Florida State obviously is a storied program, but Jimbo Fisher left after a lackluster year last year.
Yeah.
And in my experience, coaches don't leave storied programs like that unless they can see the writing on the wall and recognize basically the talent that I have here is not enough to sustain a really good season next year. So it's going to be another down year unless I leave and go somewhere else. So Jimbo obviously goes to Texas A&M to rebuild his brand. The money did not help, did not hurt. What was it? $70 million or something like that. So I expect Taggart to come in, have a little bit of a down year. And it's not like Willie Taggart's been a fantastic first year coach anyway. His year at Oregon was pretty underwhelming. Not bad by any means, but not a whole lot of razzle dazzle. So I expect that Florida State fans will have a little bit of a wait to see them return to a really high level of competition.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think what's going to be very interesting is I was checking out lines this morning on the Virginia Tech-Florida State game, which is being played on Labor Day on that Monday night. And right now, Florida State at home against Virginia Tech is a 7.5-point favorite, which is a pretty big spread, I would argue, for a first-year coach in the first game. You just don't know what's going to happen in these first games. But I really and truly expect if Florida State wins this game, as the prognosticators are saying they will, I think on Tuesday morning, the national media is ready to crown Willie Taggart as the best coach in the ACC and how much of a success story this is. And I think that is going to be the biggest roller coaster of emotion in terms of new coaches, I'd argue, across the country that we'll see is the rise and fall of Willie Taggart. I think Scott Frost is going to get a lot of attention up there at Nebraska, but for some reason, the excitement around Willie Taggart right now is so fever pitch that I think it's going to be very, very interesting to watch how much they love him when he's winning and how much they turn on him when he's not winning. Like you said, that program was struggling last year. Obviously, losing DeAndre Francois, the starting quarterback in that first game against Alabama, was crushing, but there's a lot more to a program than just a quarterback. So yeah. I agree with you that this could be a little bit of a down year for Florida State. I think they'll still be second or third in the Atlantic division of the ACC. But it'll be interesting for me to watch what happens with Willie Taggart.
Yeah, no, I was going, by the way, and mentioning some of the high-profile, really impressive coaches in the ACC, and I totally forgot about Dino Babers up at Syracuse. So that's another one to add to the list. I think one of the fun things about the ACC is that whenever these teams face each other, anything can happen. I'm thinking of the Syracuse-Clemson upset, right, two years ago? Or was that last year?
On a Friday night, right? I think it was last year, Friday
night.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the cool thing is that Clemson coming in as this national powerhouse of obviously fresh off an Alabama victory in the championship game the year before, and they go up to Syracuse and lose. So that was a Dino Babers led team, and that's the fun thing I think about the ACC, and it'll be cool to see how those matchups and those upsets kind of shake things out at the end of the season.
Yeah, I'd argue from top to bottom, you have the least certainty in the ACC of probably any conference this year. As I'm looking at our five Power Five conferences, I see the ACC having the most room for chaos. I think Pitt is going to pit. Remember last year, Pitt had that epic win against Miami on Thanksgiving weekend. I'm looking at their schedule right now. If I were Penn State or Notre Dame, who we'll both cover on later, I would be nervous about playing Pitt for some reason as I'm looking at these matchups. So totally concur. The ACC is going to be a wild ride this year. And that's what's fun for me to watch as an ACC fan, except when it comes at the expense of my Hokies.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the SEC. We'll stay in this general region of the U.S.
Okay.
And I think the SEC is different from the ACC in the respect that you just mentioned, that there's not a whole lot of variability that I see in the SEC. I think Georgia is looking very strong, and Alabama is looking very strong, and that I think is going to be what it comes down to. What do you think about that?
Totally agree. Can you believe it's been 2 years since Nick Saban has won the SEC? And I know that sounds like I'm kidding and trying to be ridiculous, but can we remember two straight years where Nick Saban didn't win the SEC? And look, he's still been doing fantastic things in the college football playoff. So Yeah, it's I see Alabama and Georgia as our clear-cut favorites. I right now actually have Georgia to win the conference. I really think because of that running game that they've got, and they've still got a pretty stout defense where they've really had a resurgence since Mark Richt left. I see that program still on the up and up. I not only have Georgia winning the SEC, little preview towards the end, I have Georgia in my college football playoff for sure.
Whoa.
And being one of the favorites.
Yeah, I think you almost have to put them there given their performance last year and what looks like most of their good talent returning. I think also I can't believe Nick Saban hasn't been more direct about who the starting quarterback for the Crimson Tide is going to be.
Sure.
And I think that's been something that's gone on and caused more drama than it needed to be. And that's something that normally doesn't happen with the Crimson Tide. Nick Saban's obviously known for running a very disciplined, tight-lipped program on these matters. And instead, the drama has sort of followed him. And I have to imagine in the locker room, it's lent some instability there as well. I mean, who do the offensive players think is going to be their primary play caller on opening weekend this weekend?
Yeah, I still haven't seen a sure sign. I think more signs are pointing towards Tua than they are Jalen Hurts at this point.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. Yeah, we talked about Jalen a few weeks ago voicing his displeasure. I think he would only be doing that if it looked like, even to him, from his vantage point, Tua was going to be the guy who got the nod. So I would tend to agree. But even that lends some instability because Tua has played exactly one half of Alabama football, I think, right? Total, yeah. And that was in the national championship. So certainly a high stage, but is that representative of his consistent performance, what he can sustain over a full season? I don't know. I'm not raising doubt necessarily, but I think it again means that Alabama's coming to the stage with a play caller who does not have a whole lot of experience with the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, it's a lot of eggs to put in this one basket. I mean, if two games go poorly for Tua, now you look at bringing Jalen Hurts back in. Jalen Hurts is mad at the program. Does Tua get mad at the program? I mean, granted, Nick Saban is a fantastic spin doctor, and there's no one who seems to enjoy twisting the knife into the national media like Nick Saban. But this one feels too far out of control even for him to be effectively spinning. So if you're an Alabama fan, I think you're pretty torn right now. Do you go with the guy who took you to the dance, or do you go with the guy who took you home from the dance? I mean, it's interesting. I really don't know what to do. I mean, Kirk Herbstreit on game day a couple days ago was talking about if Tua comes out starting for the Crimson Tide, he's a Heisman favorite. Maybe not the number one Heisman favorite right in his mind, but certainly in the top three or four, which is a lot to put on a guy who we've only seen 30 minutes of football from, and we don't even know is the starter 5 days before the Crimson Tide take the field.
Right.
So I don't know. I have Georgia to win this, but I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama finds a way to win that SEC title game.
Well, let me throw a few names at you, not having to do with Alabama. There's been a fair amount of coaching turnover in the SEC this offseason, and I think there are a few guys who are going to be names to watch. And the first one that comes to mind is Chad Morris taking over the Arkansas Razorbacks. The Razorbacks have been a pretty tortured fan base for some time now because they've either been straight up bad or just good enough that it really hurts to not be really bad.
Yeah.
And that's been painful, but they've got Chad Morris, who's done a lot of good at SMU, basically built SMU into, I don't know if I'd quite say a powerhouse, but certainly a respected football school. And then I would also point to Dan Mullen, of course, coming in from Florida State. I mean, Mississippi State, but taking over a Florida Gators team that has also been reeling. I mean, I think the only fan base with more pain over the last decade than the Razorbacks has been that of the Gators. And so these two guys are coming in with the opportunity to take storied programs and put them in the right direction. So I think that'll be pretty exciting to watch. And then, of course, the last one would be Jimbo Fisher moving over to A&M. What can he do in the first year there? Will he be able to resurrect a program that, you know, hasn't had its heyday since the last time people were talking about Johnny Manziel as a promising NFL prospect?
Sure. They really turned on Kevin Sumlin, who obviously went on to Arizona, and
yeah,
I think we'll have a good season in Arizona, not a great one. But Jimbo's playing with a lot of pressure right now with how much that contract was and how much he was hailed as the returning hero when he set foot in Aggieland there. But I think A&M's going to have a mediocre season at best. I mean, just look at who they're playing. In order for Jimbo to even compete for the SEC title game right now, he's got to beat Bama, Auburn, and LSU in his own division of the
right
SEC. I mean, let alone all the other games you're looking at on their schedule. I mean, there is no way that Jimbo is going to have a great season. And now that I say that, he's probably going to make me eat my words. But as I'm looking at their schedule right now, I just don't see it. And I wonder what that fan base is going to do where so much was promised to them. And when it comes out as mediocre and kind of good enough to make a bowl game, but not good enough to truly be in the national conversation, are they going to start rethinking that contract? Probably not. But are they going to start getting a little louder to up the recruiting game? Probably.
Yeah, very possibly. What do you think about Ed Orgeron? Do you think he's on the hot seat this year? He took over in 2016 from Les Miles, first on an interim basis, and then they said, yeah, he's the guy. 6-2 in the 8 games that he was the coach in 2016, and then 9-4 last year, finished third in the standings. And now he's coming in his second full year, his third season. He has a 15-6 overall record at LSU. Do you think this could be the last year we see Ed Orgeron, or does he have a pretty long leash there? Because I see the Tigers as another, not necessarily tortured, but another frustrated fan base, because LSU continues to lose to Bama. They're not living up to their potential. They haven't been really good for a while. And that's why Les Miles, even though he did great for them early on, he just wasn't cutting it the last few years. And they went to Ed Orgeron, who seems like a guy who the players really like and the administration likes, but has not been able to deliver the goods. So what do you think about how hot his seat is?
I think he still has at least a year, unless this is just a catastrophic season and they miss a bowl game. If they miss a bowl game, really all bets are off. But I still see this LSU team being an 8-win team right now, kind of based on the softness of their non-SEC schedule. Ed Orgeron, who of course sounds like a Muppet for anyone who hasn't heard him speak recently. Good luck trying to understand what he's actually saying. But overall, I think LSU is okay with him for another year, but if for some reason they miss a bowl game, just like we talked about with Jimbo, kind of all bets are off if that thing goes poorly. But I think he's fine. Do you think he's fine, or do you think this is a hotter seat for him than I'm thinking right now?
Yeah, I think that if he turns in a 4 or 5 win campaign and misses a bowl game, I think you're right. But as long as he makes a bowl, I think he'll have a leash. For some reason, I think the LSU administration is content to not be in the running for national titles right now. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not necessarily what I would expect, but I think Ed Orgeron's pretty safe for the moment. And I think really most of the SEC coaches are pretty safe. When I'm looking at them, I don't see one who in particular looks like he's on a really hot seat right now. What about you?
Same. I'm looking at the list right now. I don't see anyone who I think is truly in danger yet. But hey, the season is still young, right? Things will be happening by week 4, I'm sure.
Oh, they definitely will. Well, let's move on. Let's talk. Let's go to the Pac-12. We'll go to the other coast. I know you mentioned Kevin Sumlin. He's taken over, of course. Herm Edwards also. That's going to be an interesting narrative to watch. See how he takes over with the Sun Devils. And I'm also focused on the UCLA Bruins, of course. The one-time Eagles coach Chip Kelly. A man who worked wonders in college and then did okay for a couple seasons in the NFL before falling flat and then getting fired midway through the season. You know it's bad when that happens. So a lot of interesting stuff going on in the Pac-12. If Eshan was here, I know he'd want to give a shout out to the Stanford Cardinal as well. Always a contender in the SEC. So I think this is going to be interesting. What would you identify as the storyline to watch in the SEC? And who do you think is going to be the champion coming out of here? We can go Pac-12 South and North. And then overall, what do you think?
So can I cop out and say that the coaching personalities in the Pac-12, I think, are the most interesting storyline coming with Pac-12 after dark this year of anything? I mean, Chip Kelly, who is known for getting results but kind of grinding on all the people he's around. Herm Edwards, who's got to be 68 or 69 at this point, who hasn't coached college ball since the late 80s, and who, of course, was run out of Kansas City in 2008. There are just some interesting personalities in the Pac-12 that I think could be very, very interesting. But when I break it down to kind of X's and O's, what I'm really seeing is I'm seeing a Stanford versus Washington matchup ultimately determining the winner of the conference overall. That I think Bryce Love is absolutely got to be on the Heisman list right now as we're doing our preseason watches. I think maybe he could finally get over that hump that, you know, Andrew Luck wasn't able to do, or any of these great Stanford athletes for so many years weren't able to do. I think Bryce Love could be the guy to get them there. But I still think Washington is probably the more complete team. I think especially their defense is really something to be to be admired when you look at the makeup of this team. I think their offense is good, not great, but I think the defense has the ability to kind of make up for that and keep what is normally a very potent conference in terms of offensive scoring a little quieter than they'd like to be. So I expect them to kind of throw your Chip Kelly offenses off their game as Chip Kelly tries to run tempo. I think that defense could absolutely snuff it out at UCLA. And I just don't see a lot of other true competition outside of Stanford and Washington this year. How about you?
Well, you know, I was a Chip Kelly fan when he was at Oregon. I was super excited as an Eagles fan when he came to Philly. I was enthusiastic after the first season. I was optimistic after the second, and then I was pretty frustrated with him by midway through the third. But as a college coach, you know, we talked about this before, but the college game is so different from the pro game.
Yeah.
And I just see him as a very successful, really sort of prototypical college coach. His head coaching record in college is 44-5. He's lost 5 total regular season games.
Yeah.
In college, which is just incredible. That's an .898 winning percentage. And I see him doing something special potentially at UCLA. If he still had Rosen, that'd be another thing entirely. I'd be way more bullish. But I think Chip Kelly has a proven ability to come into a program, not need a whole lot of time, but can hit the ground running, put together a really competitive group of players. And for that reason, I actually think that UCLA has a legit shot to win the Pac-12 South. And I know that it probably sounds crazy, and I probably will eat my words because he's dealing with a school that is not a powerhouse. He's coming in with a brand new roster, guys he did not recruit. I mean, the deck is certainly stacked against him, and I think the odds-on favorite here are the Stanford Cardinal, like you mentioned. But just to make it interesting, I'm going to say watch out for Chip Kelly and the Bruins. And I would agree with your Pac-12 North prediction as well. Washington, very impressive program up there, turning in quality season after quality season. I would like for this year to be the year that a Pac-12 team can be represented in the college football playoff. I'm not sure if it'll happen, but we'll see. And by the playoff, I mean the championship game.
It's funny that we hit on Washington, Stanford, who I think everyone agrees with are kind of the top two teams coming out of the Pac-12 North. And then we hit UCLA, who right now is projected just by Vegas odds to have a 5-7 season
right.
in the Pac-12 South. But we didn't hit on USC, who is a predominant favorite, especially in the South. We didn't hit on Arizona with Kevin Sumlin. We aren't hitting any of these normal powerhouses, which is just an interesting time in the Pac-12, I'd argue. I think Chip Kelly has a lot of potential to really revive that conference along with the other coaches, but I like your pick kind of going out on a limb. I just don't know what to think of UCLA. I saw he suspended 6 guys for his opening game. Obviously, he removed a lot of players when he took over that coaching job. I just don't know what to expect out of this team. And I think Chip Kelly has me exactly where he wants everyone trying to analyze his team, that they don't know what they're going to expect other than tempo and some high-powered offense. So,
right.
I hear you, man. That could be fun to watch.
Yeah, I think so. You have to stay up for the Pac-12 after dark, although you won't have to, P, because you're already on that time zone. So
Prime time, baby.
Pac-12 football.
I'm going to have to watch my Hokies at 9 a.m. on the early
man.
East Coast starts. You know, the Buffalo Wild Wings out here are all 24/7, so I guess
nice.
I'll be eating wings at 9 a.m.
Are you a B-Dubs fan?
Oh, I love B-Dubs.
Really?
I know it's not that good. I know it's not good for you. I know the service is awful, but there's something about B-Dubs that
okay, so,
I love.
I mean,
I love.
I don't care about it being bad for you. I mean, I eat food that's, quote, bad for me all the time, but it's good for my soul, so that's what matters.
There you go.
But B-Dubs, I'm a little bit of a Buffalo wing snob, and I used to love B-Dubs, but that was in college, and since college I've had this palate that's just like matured tremendously, and I eat things now that I didn't touch then, and I don't touch things now that I ate then, and I love B-Dubs then, I did not love B-Dubs now.
Is it the microwave taste? Is it the slight odor of dirty dish rags? Is it the 3 dudes who are being obnoxious in the corner? What is it that's changed about you, man?
Yes, it is. Indeed.
No, well, so, I'll be sure to text you at 9 a.m. when I'm watching my Hokies from there.
You should. Send me some pictures. Have you done the Blazin' Challenge at B-Dubs?
No, but I did try a Blazin' Wing once and cried for about 3 hours. So
yeah, well,
there's that. Thanks for bringing that memory up.
Tell me when you do 12 of them in 5 minutes, and then we can talk. So I've done it. It's really fun.
That was also awful. I'm surprised you recovered by now.
That was a younger, more foolish me whose prefrontal cortex had not grown and developed enough to make mature, responsible decisions. So, but Anyway, I digress. Should we go now to Big 12?
Let's do it. I got to be honest. I don't have a lot on this conference as I'm looking at it. I think Oklahoma was kind of the fun team to watch with Baker. I think Oklahoma State with Mason Rudolph was fun. I mean, it's a conference known for their offense, not really known for their defense. And I don't really see a lot of that changing, regardless of who's under-centered any of these teams. So I have Oklahoma winning the conference more so because I think Lincoln Riley is one of the most exciting young coaches in the game. I think he's a great offensive mind, so I think he'll do something with Oklahoma. I know a lot of people are high on Will Grier right now out at West Virginia. I absolutely see this being an Oklahoma-West Virginia race in the Pac-12, but other than that, I don't really know what to think about this conference. I'm sure Tom Herman's going to find a way to get the Longhorns to 7 or 8 wins. Everyone's going to think Texas is back, and then we're not going to know because they're going to blow a game late. But I don't really know any other storylines out of here other than I think Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Texas are the three teams we'll watch.
Yeah, well, of course, I'm an Austin resident, and for that reason, I'm very, very in tune with the hopes and dreams of the Longhorn faithful. Of which I am certainly not a member, but I have a healthy respect for the burnt orange, and I appreciate the enthusiasm that they bring.
Beautiful stadium.
Yes.
Beautiful stadium.
You know, I actually walk by it every day on my way to work.
Nice.
So I'll be following closely the fortunes of the Longhorns for that reason alone. And I think what Tom Herman can do in his second year is going to be interesting. There are some reports coming out, and these are, of course, you know, I have to take them with a grain of salt. They're being reported by, like, you know, the Texas Tech, you know, sports blogs and things like that. But some stories about Tom Herman not treating his players very well, them not having good facilities, not clean facilities, not good water, things like that. So, you know, something to keep an eye on. Okay. Texas does not have a great patience for coaches who are trying to rebuild, like Charlie Strong will tell you.
Sure.
Tom Herman already turned in a disappointing freshman campaign and was really just sort of blaming Charlie Strong's recruiting for that, which I thought lacked a little bit of class. I think the jury is out on Tom Herman is basically the point of where this is going. So that's one storyline to watch. I would also say I would echo your sentiments about West Virginia. I think the Mountaineers are a fun football team. I lived in West Virginia for a portion of my childhood and always liked the blue and gold. And I think Will Grier is a really exciting guy and I think a really good NFL prospect. I'm not a draft evaluation specialist by any means. But I do think that he has a lot of the prototypical tools that NFL teams look for in a quarterback, and I think that's something interesting to watch. Another storyline, and these are sort of echoing the same team as you are, but for different reasons. Lincoln Riley, of course, you mentioned him, but I'm more interested in watching the quarterback for Oklahoma, Kyler Murray, who I'm sure you're tracking, was drafted by the Oakland A's, the Billy Beane Moneyball Oakland A's, with a number 9 spot in the MLB draft. And so he had the option of basically playing baseball immediately or playing the first season of the NFL, and he worked that out with the A's, or not NFL, I'm sorry, college football. So he worked that out with the A's, and he's going to be starting as Oklahoma's quarterback, and then we'll go on to a life, presumably, of professional baseball after that, barring some drastic life decision change that Kyler Murray could have in store. But he's playing as Oklahoma's starter under center, and then we'll go on to a baseball career. And I think that'll just be a fun storyline to watch. How far can he take this very talented Lincoln Riley-led Oklahoma squad before going on to start what will probably be a very promising pro career?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I had totally forgotten about that storyline from, what was that, about 4 or 5 months ago when we were talking about that?
Yeah, exactly.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun. I totally agree.
And for listeners, there's Virginia. Sorry, go ahead.
I forgot you lived in West Virginia. I did. Make sure that we intro the next podcast by singing Country Roads together. So,
you know, there's...
giddy up. Warm up the pipes.
I'm sure you are very up on the world of memes, but there's been, over the past few weeks, there's been a resurgence of interest in the famous West Virginia Country Roads Take Me Home song. And there have been plenty of memes about this. So filling up my Instagram feed, because I follow lots of wonderful meme-filled accounts, there have been lots of things referencing the classic song.
Good. I've got 2 or 3 in my mind right now teed up that I'll be sure to be spamming your phone with later on.
Maybe we'll just change the theme song of the intro to a little remix or something.
Love it. I expect you to be singing it next time too, just
of
so
course.
You know. I'll back you up on that.
It's the only way. Okay. So should we do our final conference and do some Big Ten discussion?
Yeah, I actually think this is the best conference in college football this year. As much as it pains me to say as an ACC guy.
Of course it is the best conference. The Big Ten is perennially the best conference. This is the breadbasket of America. This is This is what's great about college football. It's right here in the Big Ten.
I immediately regret saying that. Immediately.
You said the best conference. I'm going to hold you to that. So, storyline to watch here, Pete. I think let's set a ground rule that we're not going to talk about Urban Meyer as the storyline because we've already covered that. We, of course, did our emergency pod last week when news broke. We are agreed that this is very bad for Urban Meyer, very bad for the Ohio State faithful. Pretty embarrassing for Urban Meyer and shameful the way he handled himself in this whole issue and investigation. And he comes out looking pretty darn guilty and looking like he certainly played a role in covering up what was a terrible thing that Zach Smith allegedly did to his wife, Courtney. So with that said, I think we can move on and not talk about that as the storyline to watch. I think that certainly is one to watch. And I'm not suggesting that we look elsewhere. But since we've already covered that in a previous podcast, I think we can cover other material here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's great. Let's stick to football. I think we both are in lockstep on how we feel about Urban Meyer these days. So yeah. I'm with you, man. Let's stick to football. And I guess talking about sometimes the best conference in football.
There you go. Sometimes, hey, yeah. You heard it here, third string. So I've got two storylines in mind, but I'll wait for you to go ahead. And if you take one of these, I'll just go ahead and with the other one.
Okay. So kind of what I'm looking at when I'm looking at the Big Ten overall is I think the biggest storyline we have to watch is what's going to happen in Michigan. I have said many times here on Third String that I think Jim Harbaugh has been the most disappointing coach in the last 4 to 5 years in college football with a Michigan team who just chronically underperforms for the standards you would expect at Michigan and the standards you would expect out of a guy like Jim Harbaugh. So I think that has been disappointing. I think what's going to be interesting is I think he has one of the best quarterbacks that he's worked with probably since Colin Kaepernick in Shea Patterson.
Yeah,
who he
totally
announced,
agree.
Two or three days ago will be his starting quarterback. So I think Michigan is going to be legitimate. They come out of the gates with a hard matchup against Notre Dame. So I don't expect Michigan to win this. I actually have Penn State winning it all, which I know the pundits are not necessarily in favor of. But I'm just, as I'm looking at Penn State's schedule, as I'm looking at their composition, I mean, They're going to miss a slight step in losing Saquon Barkley, but overall, as you look at what they have under center, who they have coming in for the running game, I am really excited about this Penn State team, and while they have a very difficult schedule, I think Penn State is going to be the last man standing here in this conference right now. I think what's going to help that is I think Ohio State goes 3-0 while Urban Meyer is out. That's all I'm going to say about Urban Meyer. But I think that they're going to falter later on because they're not going to have gelled as much as you would expect a team. And you look at them going up against Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan. I see the Big Ten cannibalizing itself quite a bit. And that's where I think Penn State is going to have the ability to kind of rise above the fray right now. But Michigan is an exciting storyline to watch for me. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's a great one. I think that is certainly the most prominent storyline related to certainly on-field stuff in the Big Ten is whether or not Harbaugh can pull this off. I think he's certainly lost out on his share of success. He can't figure out how to beat Ohio State. He loses it to Michigan State on last second blocked punts, but he's always had sort of excuses with that, right? Like he, you know, until last year, he didn't have a full recruiting class that was all Harbaugh people. And then there was some quarterback injuries stuff that maybe left him a little bit of an out, but now he's got Shea Patterson. Now he's got all his recruits there. The excuses are gone for Jim Harbaugh. So I think this is sort of his time of reckoning here. What can he do with a team that's truly and fully his? Totally agreed on that. You mentioned Penn State. I think I'll go with that for at least one of my storylines. You know, James Franklin, I think, really needs to get more credit for being a brilliant college coach. He took over a Vanderbilt program in 2011 that was just miserable. Went 6-7 his first year. So not great, but respectable for a rebuilding program. Then 9-4 and then 9-4 again. He got hired by Penn State in 2014. And we all know what kind of shape the Penn State program was in, you know, decimated recruiting class, guys that had left the team because there was no future, postseason ban, et cetera, all of these things. James Franklin comes in, taking over from Bill O'Brien, goes 7-6, then 7-6, then 11-3, won the Big Ten, and 11-2 last year. So he's coming in with a very impressive track record, a guy who obviously gels with his folks. I remember you pointing out last year in the aftermath of the Penn State loss to Michigan State, his players started running off the field and were upset. And he yelled back at them, like, no, get back out there. You're going to be good sportsmen and shake hands, because this is what football players do, right? So I think James Franklin needs to get more credit for being a good coach. I'm excited to see what he does with Penn State. I think the Ohio State incidents and Urban Meyer's three-game suspension provide a little bit of an opening for James Franklin here. And I think he's proven that he can win. He's already won the Big Ten once. So that's, I think, the strongest team coming out of the Big Ten. But I'm really interested in also seeing what Scott Frost can do in Nebraska. And again, Scott Frost's first year, so I don't think he's going to come in and go undefeated or anything like that. But can he show us that he was the right choice for the trustees of Nebraska to bring in there to rebuild the program and bring the Nebraska faithful, the Cornhuskers, back to what they're used to being in Nebraska? So,
yeah, great. Great points on all of it. So who do you have? Maybe you said it and I missed it. Who do you actually have in the Big Ten title game right now?
I think I'm going to go Penn State and Wisconsin.
Yep, I'll agree with that. Boy, Wisconsin just doesn't get a lot of love, do they?
They don't.
They are such a better team than we ever give them credit for. That I'm going to make a concerted effort to pay a little attention to Wisconsin this year. And I like Paul Christ. I think he's doing good things for that program. But yeah, I have the exact same matchup you do with Penn State, just squeaking that one out.
And Wisconsin and Penn State play in Happy Valley on November 10th. So we could get a little preview of that matchup. In preseason rankings, they're ranked fourth for Wisconsin and 10th for Penn State. So right now, Penn State is ranked below Wisconsin, but I think Penn State would have the upper hand, especially in Happy Valley. You know, they go white out or whatever, and I think it'll be a good game.
I totally agree. You want to talk a little cleanup? Anyone outside of the Power Five teams you want to mention? Maybe a little Group of Five action? Anyone on your radar?
Well, I mean, Pete, you know, this is the podcast where we jump all aboard the Lane Kiffin hype train.
Woo woo! Hype train.
So, I mean, how can you not mention Florida Atlantic University, the FAU Owls, Lane Kiffin School? Yeah. I would also point to another non-Power Five Florida school with the coach that I like very much, Charlie Strong. I mentioned the Texas trustees pushed him out a little bit too soon, I think. But USF and FAU, two non-Power Five Florida schools that could make a dent here. You know, UCF, I think, will not be as much in the conversation because Scott Frost has since left and gone to Nebraska. But USF and FAU could be two teams that continue to make a case for an expanded playoff. What do you think?
I totally agree with that. I think we'd be silly to gloss over the impact that the Power Five has had the last couple of years. I don't think the committee is ready to start discussing going to a 6 or an 18 playoff yet, but I'm hoping that someone makes some noise to effectively expand that playoff for us. So, of course, I got to give some love to my guy Lane Kiffin. I say my guy. I don't really know where this allegiance came from, if I'm being honest, but I feel like at this point I've committed, so I got to stick
course,
with
yeah,
it.
Of course, yeah, got to.
So I'll be paying attention to the hype train. I think we also, even though they're not a traditional Group of Five team, obviously they're an independent team, but I think you got to pay attention to Notre Dame this year. Brian Kelly has taken so much flack over the past couple of years with what he's done in South Bend, or lack thereof. I think people forget that he's 5 years removed from a national championship, where he, of course, got decimated by Alabama, but still played a national championship there in his second year. I think Notre Dame this year is for real. I don't think that they're necessarily going to be in the college football playoff, but I think that they're going to be a lot more than we've seen in the past years. I think the maturity level on that team is not quite where you need it to be. I don't know if they can necessarily handle the pressure. I mean, Brandon Wimbosh, who was finally named the starter here, is good, but I really don't think he's elite. And I think the same thing kind of goes for Brian Kelly, where he's a good coach.
Yeah.
He's a coach you don't necessarily want to match up against, but he's not going up against Nick Saban. He's not going up against Chip Kelly at Oregon, where you know you're going to get outcoached. I think Brian Kelly is good, not great. So I think the Irish will be in the top 15 here when it's all said and done. I think they'll probably get a New Year's Six Bowl, but I think that's about as far as they'll go.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Should we talk some predictions here? We've got some primetime matchups that we wanted to discuss, and then we can do CFP predictions. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it, my man.
All right, so you identified these three, which I think are very enticing here. Alabama, Louisville, what are you doing there?
I like Bama. That's the primetime game on Saturday. There's a lot of fun games on Saturday, as you guys are flipping channels here on Saturday afternoon. A lot of great games. I like Alabama in this one. I don't think Louisville really has a replacement for Lamar Jackson, who is absolutely the glue holding that team together here for the past few years, obviously winning the Heisman. I like Bama in that first one. How about you?
Yeah, totally agree. I don't really think it's actually going to be as much of a contest as people are talking about because of the Lamar Jackson absence. I think, like you said, the glue, I would use like a more explosive analogy, like the tinder to the whole thing. Like he was your X factor. You know, when we talk about X factor in our NFL previews, that was Lamar Jackson. He's gone. And so I think we're going to see a Louisville team that gets stifled by the Alabama defense. And I think Alabama is going to come away from that one. I don't think it'll be a shootout, but I think we'll see like a 21-9, pretty comfortable victory, something like that.
Cool. I like that. I like that.
All right. Miami LSU is the next one.
Ooh, I like LSU in this game. I know that all we're talking about is Miami's back, Miami's up. There's something about this matchup and the way that Miami's offense is looking as they're projecting out here. I like the LSU defense against the Miami offense. So that's why I'm giving a little bit of an edge to LSU. Obviously, LSU barely made the initial rankings, which we can all agree are made up and shouldn't matter and shouldn't exist. But LSU is number 25. Miami's number 8. I think if we see the hated turnover chain more than twice, Miami's going to have a comfortable win. But if LSU can keep those turnovers down, I like LSU's chances. How about you?
I'm not sure why you're saying the turnover chain is hated. I mean, I like it personally.
Country roads, turnover chain, you hate B-dubs. This is probably the last episode of Third String, guys. So I hope you enjoyed it. It's been a year. We're done.
Yeah,
that's it. We're done.
It was a good run while it lasted. I would say Miami by a touchdown, maybe even 10 points. But this is in Death Valley. So I think what we're going to see is a much closer contest. I think it'll be hard for the Hurricanes to go in there and open their season in at LSU. I do think Miami squeaks it out, but I don't think it's going to be by a wide margin. I think, you know, a 21-20 game, maybe something more like a 18-15 game. I think it'll be pretty close.
Okay. I am seeing right now it's actually an AT&T stadium out there in Jerry World. Does that change what you think is going to happen?
It's a neutral site. Okay. LSU's the home team, but it's neutral. All right. I stand corrected. I mean, I'm going to stick with Miami winning. I'll just expand that by a touchdown. So we'll say Miami 24, LSU 17.
I like it. It's not as good as Lee Corso, where he's predicting a safety or an extra point for the win, but I like how precise you are.
Very, very precise.
I'll give you a few bonus points for that.
You got to.
Finally, the game I'm waiting for, the Hokies in Tallahassee against the Seminoles in Willie Taggart's first game on Monday night.
Yeah, this is the Justin Fuente-Willie Taggart showdown. Who do you have here, Pete? You going with your alma mater, or are you picking against the grain?
Man, if I'm picking this one logically, you have to take Florida State in my mind, just because I think there's three big factors here. One, it's at Florida State, and I'm not as worried about the crowd or even the environment in Tallahassee. I am worried about the heat and the humidity that the players out of Southwest Virginia are going to be fighting against. Obviously, across the East Coast, you have humidity, but there's nothing like playing in Florida. It's going to be an 8 o'clock game, so a little later on, but I think the environment could mess with the Hokies a little bit. I think the Hokie defense had so many setbacks here in the offseason that a high-tempo offense that Willie Taggart likes to run is going to be very difficult for them to physically keep up with. The Virginia Tech secondary was decimated both by NFL declarations as well as two players being either removed or leaving the team, and Adonis Alexander and Mook Reynolds. Adonis left and declared early for the draft when he was academically ineligible, and Mook Reynolds was kicked off the team for possession. So the defense is just too porous right now to really keep up with a high-tempo Florida State offense, in my opinion. And third, I think the Virginia Tech offense is just not ready to compete with a primetime team like Florida State. I think Josh Jackson is going to be better, but I think when you compare both offenses, the running game that Florida State brings to the table with DeAndre Francois under center, being able to throw downfield, is much more than anything that the Hokies can put on the field right now. I think if this was a midseason game, I think it's a lot closer. I think Tech gets the edge when they have a little experience and some of the true freshmen understand the field a little more. But right now, I think there's just too much inexperience on the Virginia Tech sidelines to make this an upset. But hey, it's a 19-20 matchup, first week of the season. You never know what's going to happen. What are you thinking?
You're going to love me, Pete. I'm going Virginia Tech.
Are you making up for hating beat ups? There you I'm go. Up there for you it. Go.
We got to continue the podcast, so I've got to make up.
I appreciate the olive branch.
I'm going Virginia Tech on this one. So, yeah. And you gave a lot of great analysis. You're more familiar with the Hokies than I am. You follow them regularly, whereas I follow them, when I'm looking at the ACC. But what I see with Virginia Tech and Florida State, this matchup, like I said, it's Fuente versus Taggart. This is Taggart's first year with Florida State. It's not his recruiting class. He didn't recruit any of those guys to come to Florida State. I think a couple of them followed him from Oregon, but by and large, it's not his class. And so when you talk about a lack of experience, he might have some depth in terms of the number of years guys have played in the NCAA, but he doesn't have a time gelling with these guys beyond training camp, right? Whereas Fuente is now entering his third season, and you can guarantee that he has had this game circled on his calendar for a long time. You can guarantee that he has watched every single game of Willie Taggart and what Willie Taggart does and how Willie Taggart ran his first game in Oregon, his first game at USF before that. And I think he'll be prepared for a lot of what Willie Taggart tries to bring with his Florida State offense. So yes, Virginia Tech is outmatched, as far as the players on the field and the firepower. But I do not think Justin Fuente is outmatched. I think Josh Jackson will turn in a strong game. I think we're going to see Virginia Tech come away with a narrow victory, 18-14 over the Seminoles.
Man, I love it. I love how much you like Justin Fuente as well, because you look at what Justin Fuente has done at other programs, especially think like Paxton Lynch. Obviously, yeah. It's not working out in the NFL, but boy, Justin Fuente has this incredible ability to mentor quarterbacks.
He does. It's absolutely.
It's going to be fun for a program who hasn't had a great quarterback since, wait for it, Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod, yes.
Ooh, brought it full circle there. This is a lot of fun to watch. Gerard Evans declared early and got out of there before he could really be mentored. You look at some of the other quarterbacks over the last 7 years, and this could finally be the time. So it's exciting in Blacksburg. And I know I'm obviously a homer, but we're seeing that the next 2 or 3 years could really be something special that we haven't seen, I would argue, since probably 2010 with Tyrod, 2011 with Tyrod,
right,
or 99 with Mike Vick. I think we're on that level.
Special time.
Or could be. Excuse
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
could
sure. Be. All right. We've got one more thing to talk about, Pete. College yeah. football playoff predictions.
Yes.
This is, of course, way, 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 way too early. We're going to eat our words here, big time. But are you ready to make a prediction of the four teams that will be in the college football playoff?
Oh, I'm ready for some hot takes that we can replay in January and sound like idiots for.
Super hot takes. Are you ready for mine?
Let's do it.
All right, my first two, very unoriginal. Alabama, Clemson. All right.
Okay.
We talked about why Alabama, their biggest competition in the SEC is Georgia. I think Saban knows that, and I think Saban will have his guys prepared for that matchup against Kirby Smart squad. So I think Alabama gets in. Clemson, I think, gets in too, just because Clemson is the best team in the ACC. We talked about this already. I don't see a big upset coming there. So I think Clemson will be the de facto ACC representative.
Okay.
And then I'm going Penn State. We talked about Penn State, James Franklin. I think he will guide his squad to a Big Ten championship, and I think they'll be the de facto Big Ten rep. And that leaves basically Big 12 and Pac-12, or the off chance of a non-Power 5 team squeaking in here. I'm going to go with, this is my bold prediction here, Pete. This is the one that we're going to be laughing at come January.
Lay it on me.
All right. Going with Tom Herman's squad, UT Austin.
No way.
I am.
I love it.
Starting the season in the AP poll, ranked 23rd of 25. So they've got a long, long, long way to climb. But if they get there, I'm going to be in Austin for every moment of it. So it'll be a glorious time.
Dorm rooms across Austin, Texas are rejoicing right now.
They
as
are.
They play third string on speaker.
Of course.
This is a great moment for us. This is a great moment. This has been some highs and lows on this episode.
It really has.
There have been some highs and lows.
All right. And we'll revisit this in January and see how it played out. What are your four? What's your prediction?
Who do you have for your overall winner? Do you have one, or do you just have your top four right now?
You know what? I didn't go that far. Man, should we go that far? I'll think about it while you give me your four if you want me to do that. You know
so
what?
You
I'll go there. I'll go there right now. As much as I love the Texas Cinderella narrative, I'm going to go with Penn State to win it all. You said okay. It yourself, the Big Ten is the best conference in football. Those were your words verbatim. So if Penn State's the representative, we got to go with Penn State to win it all. But in all seriousness, I think if Penn State makes it to the college football playoff, I think they would have a very good chance to win it all because of the squad that James Franklin has built there.
Yeah, I agree with if they can find their way in, they're very competitive.
They play in big games. They show up for sure. That's undeniable. And so I like their chances if they make it there.
Yeah, totally agree. So you and I are the same on two of our picks. I too like Clemson and Penn State in the college football playoff. I'm going to go with the Georgia Bulldogs as my third team coming out of the SEC. And I'm going to stick with Washington out of the Pac-12 to squeak their way into the playoff. Obviously, they're always on the bubble, much like Penn State. I think the only thing that is going to keep them out right now is the lack of top-tier competition that they're playing.
Definitely.
Week in, week
yeah,
out.
That's
like
always
Penn
the case,
State's,
right?
Your Georgia's. Yeah, so that could be the factor. I think if they lose two games, they're absolutely out of it. If they lose one, look for there to be some drama here with the selection show in early December. And my overall winner, I'm going to take the Georgia Bulldogs. I think they got robbed last year by Bama.
So this is the moment,
Tua,
huh?
When Tua did whatever it was Tua does. Yeah. And I think Georgia gets their sweet, sweet revenge this year.
If it goes that way, I wouldn't mind seeing that. But I would rather see Georgia, if it gets revenge at all, just get it over Alabama and then not see an SEC team win at all. So.
Agreed. I would love to not see an SEC team win.
Yeah. Well, Pete, I think that about does it. We went a little long, so sorry about that to our listeners, but there's a lot of football to cover. A lot of stuff out there on the gridiron. So, Pete, thanks for joining for this Pigskin edition. To our listeners, if you want to chime in, you should do that at Zach Crippen, at Pete_LeCleed, at Third String Pod. Ending all those, you can go on Facebook, facebook.com/vernacularpodcast, and join our Third String group there. And we'll be back soon with more of our NFL, NFC, AFC West previews. Until next time, thanks for listening to Third String. Pete, I'll talk to you soon.
See you, buddy.